Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. And boy, are we going to be exploring some interesting realms of thought and perception by some of the leading scientists and persons that have dedicated their lives and are still very much involved in saying, how is this experience of life going to be altering? My guest is Zohara Meyerhoff Hieronymus. Now, we call her Zo. She's an award-winning radio broadcaster. She's very much involved as an activist for social justice and environmental situations. And she loves to be involved in the art world, both on a personal level as well as enjoying other people's art as well. And she is in Maryland, and I want to welcome Zo to the airwaves. Hello, Zo.
Well, thank you, Donna. It's a pleasure to be here with your audience today.
Now, you have taken on a project with this book that I found very intriguing. The book is titled The Future of Human Experience, Visionary Thinkers on the Science of Consciousness. My goodness, just to even bring up this topic 10 years ago would have been considered almost sacrilege by some people in the world of science. And yet, fortunately, we have evolved to the point where we're comfortable discovering.
You know, Donna, what you say there is so funny because I wrote this book 12 years ago, and when I submitted it 10 years ago, nobody would publish it. And then 10 years later, my publisher, who published my prior books in Kabbalah, said, this book's fantastic. And I think you're right. I think this decade has brought us to an awareness that we better take a quantum leap in our way of working in the world and with each other if we're going to preserve the planet and if we're going to elevate all life. And that's been my focus my entire life, is healing and elevation. And I studied Kabbalah for 10 years after being a daily broadcaster covering global affairs and foreign economics and the things that went bump in the night. And I was really looking for a method of self-mastery based in the ancient Hebrew tradition. But I had spent 30 years prior to that really interviewing the cutting-edge scientists, physicists, quantum mechanic experts, robotics experts, you know, people who work in the space program. And what I found was there was a consensus, whether it was somebody talking about Earth history, somebody talking about holistic medicine, or somebody talking about the science of consciousness, which is that we're on the verge of really coming to an appreciation that consciousness is the field in which all life takes place. And it's this consciousness that allows us to be in the driver's seat. And one of the things that I discovered after interviewing prognosticators, people who work with military planners, people who are visionaries, people who have done, you know, enormous scale inspection of meditators and what people see for the future. And what everybody agrees on is that we are about to step into our true divine inheritance, which is appreciating that each one of us is affecting the future now.
I concur with that. And I'm so intrigued with how various modalities that have been in a very isolationist positioning, regardless of whatever label they may have upon themselves, are coming to realize that that doesn't make too much sense. You can be an avid environmentalist, but if you don't understand anything really about agriculture, transportation of food and services, if you don't understand certain basic things, you're not going to get it. You may be the most well-meaning person in the world, but you're just seeing a tiny segment of the bigger picture. So there's a lot that goes on in the way of communication and education, and I think part of what has enabled us to move forward are the technologies that have evolved. I mean, when you think of the issues that are going on in the Middle East and what has been really going on there for thousands of years, this is nothing new, and patternings of thinking and action and response, and how we need to change those patternings. And what is enabling the change to come about is technology. Because
I would say, yes, that's a piece of it. You know, I would agree with you. It's interesting because the fax machine, cell phones, all of these technologies actually represent in the material sphere immaterial talents that our bodies and our minds already have, that our soul in a temporary body can do. So I've always found that interesting, that astral travel is being replicated in teleportation physically. Fax machines, you know, give us whole informations, but we can do that telepathically across great distances, you know, as you know, outside time and space. So I think there's a lot going on, the technology, and I discuss it in this book with robotics experts and artificial intelligence people like Ray Kurzweil and Hans Moravec, and they're all very certain that our evolution depends on machine and the interface between human and machine, which sounds very much like those in the alien UFO research point to finding that consciousness and machine become one. I'm not convinced that that's such a great thing for humanity unless we step up our morals, our ethics, our ability to know that everything we do affects everything else. You know, we have kind of a predatory sense of leadership in the world rather than a more generous, inclusive, more feminine, intuitive way of working with the planetary communities. And I say communities because it's the ecosystem, humans, space, etc. But I think you're right that technology offers us something, but it also concerns me that when we move into technological changes too quickly, we lose certain abilities of our own. Like if you look at our youth today and they're all in a public setting, they're all sitting there looking at their iPhone, they're not communicating, there's nothing deep going on, it's all surface frivolity. And I'm always concerned that people will lose the spiritual aptitudes they have and their emotional capacity for empathy because they're too busy sort of scurrying around the surface of things.
Well, I have found that and on my observations, that has been very consistent. But there is something else that I think that is evolving underneath, and that is the reality that the wisdom of life, if you're not willing to learn certain things when you're younger, you're going to get smacked when you're older. Somewhere along the line, you cannot avoid the interaction with people. It is going to be, it's something that's going to occur. And I'm noticing a lot more interaction is occurring via animals with many individuals. But you're correct.
I think that's
true.
This
is something that we have to go through. But we are an animal. We are part of the animal kingdom. We are different in the fact that we can create and do certain things that other species may not be able to do, but they're not doing it as we're doing it. It doesn't mean that they're not creating in their own way. So you've got this. Now, you brought up a name that I thought was very interesting, and I pulled up a note section that I had here. You talked about the futuristic vision of Hans Moravec.
Right,
now,
at Carnegie.
This man is the former director of the Carnegie Institute of Robotics, and this is so fascinating to me because it is, I've had people say, oh, but this is going to bring in a dark age, this is so bad, and of course we've had science fiction writers talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly relative to machines for, my goodness, how long?
And what I think is it doesn't matter what technology we're talking about. It's ultimately what is our purpose in using it, what is our purpose in developing it, and how do we attend to it so that it's ethical. You know, when you look at, just as an example, the pursuit of longevity, and it turns out that only extremely wealthy people would be able to afford any element of it, there's also sort of this economic divide that we already have with very normative technology between haves and have-nots, and that's a very serious issue for this planet, meaning that there's a tendency to exploit those with less for those with the most. And until we decide that we are going to change our value system to being one that looks at improving life for all through each technology, we're going to continue to develop technologies that don't necessarily bring community together. And that's my concern. Now, Moravec and Kurzweil and others basically point to the fact that the technology is so rapidly increasing that every 10 years, exponentially, it's greater than the 10 years prior, that we will create ourselves out of having to be the workforce. We won't be in factories. We won't be manufacturing. That robots, like in the car lines, will be doing this, and robots will be doing surgery, and robots will be helping us in our houses or with our disabilities. And this is all fine and good, but I still, as I address throughout the entire book, The Future of Human Experiences, there is a subplot to humanity, and it's a question of not what we are, but who we are. What is our purpose? And I believe humans are a higher lineage than the animal kingdom, but it's not to exploit and abuse. It's to elevate and to care for. But humanity has a role in becoming godlike. And by that, I mean each of us is a creator being in the fact that each of our thoughts, each of our words, and each of our deeds is literally shaping matter. And now that the scientists are able to show that this is happening at the quantum physical level, in ways we can't even see, in ways that won't manifest perhaps for years, decades, or lifetimes, we have a particular responsibility that is not necessarily focused on either in religion or in our social settings. And I think this kind of inclusive harmony is the fundamental to our preserving the planet and as we move off planet as well.
Now, there is an aspect of energy that you bring up in the book, and it has to do with cold fusion. And I can remember bringing this up to someone that has been involved in science, and they say, oh, this is a myth. Cold fusion doesn't do anything. And I happened to see a program, it was just yesterday, and they were talking about fracking and doing all kinds of things and all of the political rhetoric that goes on. And I thought to myself, we have so much energy. Tesla came up with the understanding, now he didn't leave it behind, the understanding that there is free energy,
yeah.
That many of the resources that we have utilized to the point when he was alive, that we are still utilizing today, and our way of mining and doing things, this is something, he said, we don't need to be concerned about that. We can have free energy, and literally nobody would have to pay for it. This is something that, yes, there might be a machine involved in creating this, but it's already there, and it could be minimal in cost. So it would bring comfort, it would bring heat, it would bring cold, you know, if you needed air conditioning. And I thought, I've known of people that have worked on this, and all of their work has been stymied. Scientific progress. It seems like until the old ones die off, there's no opportunity for the reality of change to come in. That's the typical legend that's promoted.
Well, you know,
you're not going to see things happening.
Mm-hmm. Well, the late Jean Maloff, who was really responsible for continually pushing cold fusion out front, along with Pons and Fleischmann, who were the original experiment, showed us that the contrast between cold fusion and our current forms of nuclear power is literally like light and day, because cold fusion mm-hmm. is the use of water and safely splitting the water, the hydrogen and the oxygen, without an explosion. And from it, as you point out, you can get so much energy for everything. And I think, as Maloff said on one of my programs, that cold fusion is like the transistor was in its infancy. And mm-hmm. of course, you're right. Anytime the status quo is entrenched with government funding, and we're talking about billions and billions of dollars, they don't want to lose their funding. And what we find is there's such scientific bias rather than open-mindedness that we sort of assume in a very poetic fashion, oh, all scientists are open-minded. In fact, like so many people, they start looking out for their jobs and for their own particular set of values as well as philosophies. And cold fusion was a perfect example of media destruction as well as government decision to destroy it before it came out. But people, hundreds and hundreds of labs have continued what Pons and Fleischmann did in 1986, I believe it was. We started covering it. And in 89, when we talked to Pons and Fleischmann and others, it's gone on. And of course, these would replace these football size envisioned nuclear power plants, and it would get away from hot fusion, which is so devastating to all of life. And I certainly think the Japanese plants will tell us in a modern day, just a few years ago experience, that this is not nothing, that nuclear energy in the fashion that we currently use it as a result of warfare is destroying the Earth, and that it moved into medicine as nuclear medicine. We have people dying from diagnostics as well as treatments for things they wouldn't die if they moved towards a more natural way of supporting themselves. And that sort of, I have to say, Donna, things come back very basic for me after decades and decades of serious research as well as spiritual practices, in that our agriculture needs to change, and it needs to go back to true farming principles, which is that everything comes from the soil. And I make that leap from hot fusion, nuclear radioactive materials, to the kind of chemical farming we've had since World War II, and it's gone up exponentially now into genetics with GMOs. We have to appreciate that we and everything that lives depends on what grows. And if we continue to pollute all of our natural resources, only those things that can kind of mutate, if not become deformed, can make it through. I mean, nature has an incredible way of getting rid of what she needs to in order to survive. So I have faith in sort of Sophia and in Gaia and the natural consciousness of the planet to do what needs to be done for its own longevity. But at the same time, we have a responsibility, like all other Earth-bearing planets of other Earth-like consciousness, to be stewards and to take care of what we have. And we don't lack either the wisdom, the knowledge, the science, or the tools to change literally everything that's going on. And I simplified it after years of looking. Is that we have lived by what's called, I call, a death economy. And you'll look at it in war, in the way women and children are treated, in the way the land is abused, in the way animals are tortured, in the way they're used as fodder and just production rather than consciousness with sentient life. And this is all because we don't value life. A life economy wouldn't support things that destroy anything. A life economy would say that everybody should elevate the world together. Everybody should be benefiting by the progress we're making. Clearly, that's not happening. And it would change the way we think of things. We would choose life first, and that would change everything.
In your broadcasting, your path has crossed that of many other people who are in their own way and manner trying to make a difference. And your path also has crossed with those people that are entrenched, just as you've discussed. I think it's a very common human condition, and I think what we are looking at in today's world, as we are advancing with the technology, the aspect of change is also coming in with such a speed that a lot of people, where they thought maybe they had 30, 40 years to be able to evolve through something, sometimes mm-hmm. it's less than 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this has happened in different forms and different ways throughout history. But it really is taking place right now. And I found that your comments on traveling off the planet, now to me, this is a given. We're going to be doing it. No big
deal. No question. We already are.
That's right. So how are we going to be responsible when we do this? I forget how many tons of waste is up in space. I mean, the danger of having satellites destroyed by trash, all of this, it's just unbelievable. And we're trashing outside of our planet as well as inside of our planet. And I'm going, some genius has to come up with a recycle situation here where all of that can be utilized. And it really is amazing, because I really think that Star Trek is a reality right now, and we're going to have experiences, and maybe it won't be allowed to the public's knowledge, but these are things that are going to happen. This is something mm-hmm. that's expanding right now at a phenomenal, phenomenal rate.
Well, you know, I've had the opportunity over the decades to interview very serious astronauts, Edgar Mitchell and others, and my husband and I worked with Dr. Stephen Greer to do the debriefing of the senators and the House members years ago about what we already know about our engagement with other intelligence, other life forms. Perhaps some of it's from our own solar system, some of it might be outside of it. I mean, where or what it is isn't as important to me as how do we respond. And our government, mm-hmm. unlike most of the governments of the world, has responded as though it's a military issue, and they continue to just lie and tell us such ridiculous stories that when you look at the French government or the Chinese government or others who are very public about UFO abductions, UFO sightings, phenomena they don't understand, crashed sites where intelligent life survived, that there was collaboration. We know that for a fact in our own government. So to me, the question is not are we having an engagement with off-planet intelligence as we are. And so when I think about if we're going into outer space, why are we going there? When you listen to people talk other than those who think it's the way to preserve the human race because Earth will become a rather devastated place for a couple thousand years until life kind of rebirths itself. But I ask, why are we going? It can't just be for ourselves, because that's how we've ruined the planet. It's always this greedy, what's for me now? And when you listen to people talk about mining the moon, that we're going there to exploit matter, rather than what kind of qualities do human beings have to offer the whole intergalactic community? You know, what is it about free will, which is really the beautiful quality of being human that presumably not all intelligent societies have? What does the free will human have to offer the rest of the society in the cosmic place? And so I return, interestingly enough, from very far out quantum sciences to the very ancient spiritual paths, because whether it was the Aztec tradition or the Chinese I Ching, they all developed technologies for measuring our relationship to the cosmos, as above, so below, as within, so without. And they showed, and as Robert Bovall, Graham Hancock, and many others have shown, that the Orion star system used to be a calibrator for how things were aligned on this planet. And when we changed our meridian for measuring longitude on the planet to Greenwich, which was the Naval Observatory, and that was in the 1600s, we went off our prime meridian marker. And some say that in Orion's belt we see the galactic center lining up, and that what's happening right now through the precession of the equinoxes is that we're coming into a new alignment with the cosmos. It's just we've lost our heirloom timepieces for measuring it and for appreciating how when something happens on Mars, it affects us. When something happens in Venus in relationship to the Earth, it affects us. And that's what the ancient art of astrology has tried to preserve for us. So I often think it's the ancient peoples and the Aborigine peoples of today who have kept the Earth traditions that appreciate, as above, so below, we are part of the cosmos. What happens in the intergalactic community happens to each of us, and what each of us does here in our own little bodies, in our own little households, in our own little jobs, is affecting star systems. Now, people say, oh, so that's ridiculous. I'm not affecting the star system serious, but we are. And that's the beauty of what physics has brought. So physics and the spiritual traditions now have come together, and this is the beauty of the flowering of the sixth sun, as the Aztecs say, and that all of the traditions, or as Irvin Laszlo talks about, or Ken Wilber, or myself, when we talk about integralism, now is the time to take the best of everything and examine how each thing informs the other, because the truth is, as Laszlo says, information comes to us not just from the Internet. It comes from the person we're sitting next to, or the person we see on the news, or the person we heard about in a book, that we are literally all connected through our consciousness. And this is why, Donna, it's so important that each one of us has a job to do, which is to come into self-mastery, to have control of our emotions, to be kind mm-hmm. when we can, as much as possible, to be reverent towards animals and nature. And these are very basic principles that the free will human is meant to learn.
I was sad to see that Ingo Swann had passed on, and he passed away this year, if I read your information correctly in the book.
Yeah, he did. Mm-hmm.
This was a man that was exceptionally talented and was very much involved in government work, the study of the mind, remote viewing. He was very, very talented. And this is something that he tried to convey to others, is that they had the capacity for tapping into their own resources. And he did some writing. But I really think that it was disappointing to him in his lifetime, the paradigms of perception in the scientific and the military environment. And I think he sort of cloistered himself away as he got older, saying, I don't want to be bothered with this anymore. But yet he did open himself up to a few individuals, one of whom I did have a chance to interview last year. And what he was able to share with her, she was able to put into a book, which is wonderful because she had to speak in the language of today, which was very, very good. And I think people like Ingo Swann, Jean Dixon, who was a very good friend of yours, and she passed away a number of years ago. But this is so important to be to share with people the relationship and how important it is to be consciously present with your mind thoughts, with how you're feeling, and with what's going on, because there is that relationship. It's amazing, because once you become mindful, you have to pay attention.
Well, and you have to take responsibility. Most of us don't want the responsibility of thinking we're creator beings, just as it's taught in most of the spiritual traditions. We are creator beings, and that means our thoughts are impressing the ethers, and our words are shaping matter. Energy begets matter. So whether it's in healing through energy medicine, which is certainly a big part of the 21st century, thankfully, and it's a very ancient Hindu and other society traditions, Ingo had the beauty of establishing the protocols for remote viewing. And with Hal Puthoff and Russell Targ and others at Stanford Research Institute back in the 60s, was able to show a coordinate-based methodology for the ability of any human to see anywhere, anytime. And this ability called remote viewing is something all of the indigenous peoples have practiced through all time, which is how mm-hmm. a native can sit and wait for 2 days and know that somebody's coming to visit. So what he was showing us and what he was able to do and what those who were trained in the military Stargate program and then the offshoots that others have created as a result of their experience in the program has really taken us another step into appreciating that those things we need to do with a satellite, we can do with our body. Those things mm-hmm. that we need high, expensive equipment to do, we can do from wherever we are. And that's why the military used remote viewers to help with the Iran hostage situation, to find Russian troops, meaning you can find and divine anything you want. It's a question, not the question, but the methodology requires the right question. And that's what dowsing and remote viewing and all of these parascientific powers that Ingo and others help us appreciate are really based in asking the right question. So often we look for answers, but the question isn't the right one, and the answers are enfolded in the question in the same way matter is enfolded in the immaterial.
You have a section in your book, which for those of you listening, The Future of Human Experience, and I'm talking with Zoe Meyerhoff, if you are just tuning in at this time. She brings in many different concepts. I was intrigued, because this has come up in conversation in my own environment just recently, the biodynamic beekeeping and the secret life of bees. Now, bees, tens of thousands of them, have been dying in California. They have, in areas of China, they have been literally eliminated because of pesticides and other things, and there's all of these dynamics that are going on in the bees. I mean, in our neighborhood, I've seen as many 10 different types of bees, honeybees.
Mm-hmm.
They're just amazing. They're just amazing. And they're very, very busy. I live in the Pacific Northwest. And I'm just in awe of them. And without them, we won't have much of the food that we depend upon. But talk about Gunther Hauk. And he's in charge of the Spikenard Farm Honeybee Sanctuary in the Blue Ridge Mountains in Virginia, which is gorgeous country, by the way, for those of you maybe that live in that area or maybe you've never been there. Oh, it's a must-see, especially in the fall. It's just gorgeous.
Well, you know, Gunther Hauk was a biodynamic teacher in the Waldorf school system in Europe. And when he came back to this country, he helped with the Pfeiffer Institute. And now Gunther, as you pointed out, Spikenard Farm, has been teaching others how to raise bees. You know, beekeeping was not an industry. And what's happened is the same way we have mined cows for milk and we raise animals in pens to eat them, we've treated the bees the same with the same unholy kind of alliance of money-making. So, for instance, they now mass-farm queens, and the queens then are killed on the eighth day to get royal jelly. Well, that's like a slaughter of the buffalo herd. The bees are meant to eat their own honey in their hive, and what we've done is replace them with plastic inserts, and they take out the honey and put in corn syrup. So we don't respect the spirit of the bee any more than we respected the spirit of the buffalo. And this is the same thing. The problem with bees and not having them beyond even pollination is the loss of formic acid. And everything in life, including our DNA, depends on it. And they've noticed, for instance, in forests that were dying, besides remineralizing it with glacial dust, they've reintroduced ant farms because the ants produce a tremendous amount of formic acid. So with the bees and the ants together and our reverence for them and understanding they have a role to play which is just not for our own utilitarian use. Bees used to be, again, back to traditional agrarian farming practices where cows were fed on pastures, not lots. The manure didn't run into the streams as we have now. It didn't use up the water in the aquifers. It didn't pollute the waterways. The bees were a part of every garden. People had a beehive in the garden to help their own plants. And then the same way that we find in Dan Carlson's work with Sonic Bloom, he discovered that the songbirds have a reason. They're not just pretty. They're not just to entertain us or for us to capture them or us to kill them and put them in boxes. They actually make plants open and thrive. So the frequency of the songbird, the bees doing what they're supposed to do, the hives are meant, they're meant to be able to leave the hive and come back, you know, and now that we have imprisoned them in these plastic cages, no wonder they're dying, beyond all the other impacts that we now know from certain kinds of products used in agriculture.
Mm-hmm. It's a fascinating arena. And fortunately, there's more and more information that is coming out about mm-hmm. this. And it's affecting people globally.
When no question.
When you think about it, it is food production is mandatory. This is something that I find so many people, adults and young individuals.
Yeah. Well, biodynamic farming is really a key, and everybody can take part by having small organic gardens in their own backyards.
Mm-hmm. Very, very true. Well, I know we're just about out of time for our chat, Zoe, and I really feel that your book, The Future of Human Experience, brings forth so many paradigms of thought. You also have information in here on Mars. You have information about scientists and what they've discovered and how things were filtered and not allowed to be seen in the reality as they should be. And that is one of the wonderful aspects I feel about the printed word. Now, I know people could probably get this on Kindle, what have you, but there is something about being able to hold a book in the hand and to be able to write in it and to be able to read it. And this is a book that you, I think, would want to make notes in the margin because it's very provocative. It's also very illuminating. It makes you aware that we're being prepared for changes coming forth perhaps even faster than we imagined because it's necessary. We really have to look at what we can do in our own individual spaces to make a difference. The Future of Human Experience, Visionary Thinkers on the Science of Consciousness, and more. Zoe, you have a ZoharaOnline.com. That's a website. People will find out more about it. It's ZoharaOnline.com. Thank you so very much for being my guest. I wish you continued success. And this book, even though you wrote it 12 years ago, it's very timely today.
Well, it was updated over the last year.
Wonderful, wonderful information in it. Thank you, Zoe. And again, for those of you listening, go to ZoharaOnline.com, and I will be fascinated with the information that is there. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away. We've got more good things to share.
Too many people become victims of frivolous lawsuits and scammers simply because they were unprepared. At Corporate Direct, we use the latest legal tools to help our clients of all sizes create a strategy to protect what is theirs. Asset protection is not only for the wealthy. Our strategies and tools are very affordable and practical. Give us a call at 1-800-600-1760 or go to CorporateDirect.com to see how we can help you. That's 1-800-600-1760 for CorporateDirect.com.
Amino Muscle Snack Time, the chewable nutrition that feeds your muscles. Amino acids are the building blocks of protein. When you exercise, muscle tissue naturally breaks down. This low-cal, chewable snack helps to reverse that process and won't pack on the pounds. You can chew a few tasty vanilla tablets or any one of their other flavors before or after physical exercise, right before bedtime or first thing in the morning to jumpstart your metabolism into gear for the day. Convenient to carry in a purse, backpack, or briefcase, they are a tasty snack for the person on the go. Firm, fit muscles, trim, healthy body. Sound good to you? Check out Amino Muscle Snack Time Chewable Nutrition by going to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Tone up, trim up, and nourish your body to the fitness level you desire. Amino Muscle Snack Time Nutritional Tablets. Check out the information and order today. Go to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Life is such an interesting situation, isn't it? We are living on the cusp of change, and we're all participants in this magnificent drama. And good, bad, or indifferent, hey, you do make a difference. It's very important for you to know. Donna Sebo here. Telephone lines are now open. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat today at 888-627-6008. For those of you that might be first-time listeners, all I need from you is your first name or your initial. And then, of course, I always like to know where you're calling in from, what part of the country or the world. And sit back, relax, let me tell you what I perceive. And then, of course, you're always welcome to ask a question about anything that is important to you. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking with Susie Kuntz. Now, Susie's been on my show before. She is such a wonderful woman. Not only that, she is a beloved teacher. And this woman has developed instruments to use. I say instruments. I should say techniques to use involving color, movement, to help teach children. It is marvelous. And we're going to be talking about that tomorrow. And This week, we've got a lot of fun things regarding the home and frugal foodies and all kinds of stuff. So on Wednesday, we're going to be talking with Laura Starr, and we're going to be talking about frugal foodie. This is a woman that has fun determining how she's going to get the most for her dollar. Oh, I just love this. I just love the inventiveness of people. And she is going to be with us, and then we're also going to be talking about Andrea, or with Andrea Garrison, on Wednesday as well, in the presence of Angel. She has some wonderful, wonderful stories to share. Then on Thursday, we'll be talking with Billy Sharp. That's right, lemons and lavender. Can you smell it? Ooh. Two potent fragrances that can make a difference in life. Well, her book has a lot of potent information. And then on Friday, we're going to be talking with Carol and Paul Benson on five steps to thrive. Yes, five steps to thrive. And it is just so absolutely wonderful. All of these people that are really making a difference in life. That's one of the joys that I have about doing this show. Because it enables me to come in contact with, I would say, the positive in life. Now, almost every one of these people, probably, and I've interviewed well over 3,000, they've all had something that's affected them deeply, where they say, I really want to make a difference. I want to bring something to life's table, to life's banquet, and share it with other people. And it is making a difference. And I think the more we can communicate, the more we can share, the more we can become aware. It is so important. And we don't try to tell other people everything that they should do, but we try to make suggestions and then back it up with information that they can research, they can explore. I can't tell you how many times I've had conversations, even with perfect strangers, and I'll say, well, why don't you check this? Or why don't you check that? Because you need to know that you have options to work with. I can't tell you how many people, and I have been one of them. I've been one of them that was not aware of choices that were available. And that is the gift of technology. But you know what? You have to talk to people, for heaven's sakes. You have to be able to communicate. And yes, we're all telepathic. We all have a capacity of being able to communicate, but I'll tell you what, one of the most effective ones still is opening your mouth and sharing with people. It really is quite simple. You go into a store. If you don't know what aisle or where something is located, you go and you ask a question, don't you? Someone will say, go check this, go check that, go check the other. You may do like I did just last week. I went into the grocery store. I was looking for pectin because I was going to do some canning. Now, logically, it should have been in a certain area. Around the baking goods, right? Wouldn't you think of that? Food, baking, canning, all of this stuff goes together. In my mind, that's how it goes. That wasn't the case. So I went and I asked someone, and they said, go to aisle 12. Well, I said, aisle 12. And I had something like ketchup or whatever that was there, and I go, why would it be in aisle 12? So what did I do? I went to aisle 11 that had the baking stuff. Couldn't find it. And this young lady, it was very specific. She said, you go down aisle 12, you'll find it on the left side. So finally, I went over to aisle 12. You think I'm a little stubborn? Nah, not much. Anyway, I went over to aisle 12. Sure enough, in this little section, totally not in what I would consider the logical place to look, not in with baking items or the food items that you would associate with that, there was the pectin. And I'm not any different from you. I'll say, well, I don't see it, so that person probably was wrong. She wasn't wrong. She knew exactly what was going on, but I had to do my own process. Aren't you like that? Don't you have to go through your own process of evaluation and think, well, let me check this out first. And then all of a sudden, you do that. You did that when you were a kid. Didn't you do that? Didn't someone say to you, now, I want you to know, if you do this, this is the result. And you look at it and say, nah, I don't believe you. I got to check it out for myself. Sure enough, you find that person that gave you the advice, it worked out. On the other hand, maybe you check something out and you go, I think I'm going to try something else. And maybe you end up being right. You have shifted something. You've expanded a level of understanding, and you can share that knowledge with someone else. So we have all of these paradigms that we get stuck into, but questioning is a good thing. Questioning, whether it's regarding your health, whether it's fixing a better brownie, whether it is cleaning with something that's going to be supposedly safer and organic and you find it really doesn't do the job, or whatever. I mean, we have to explore, don't we? We have to check things out. We have to determine what is really going to be right, and we have to be able to evaluate it. That's the human experience. So don't be afraid to challenge, and maybe what you're told is correct, or maybe you're going to discover something that's even better than what you were told. It's okay to question and prove things for yourself. And I share my example because, hey, I'm just like the rest of you. I am fortunate in that I am able to interview so many different people from so many modalities in life. But remember, that is my choice. And that is something I opted to do. Someone else might opt to get involved in science in a way that I would not choose to do. Someone else may choose to get involved in something like mechanics, which God knows you would never want me to work on your car. It wouldn't even ever have a hope or a prayer of working. That is not my strength, believe me. So you have all of these differences that we have, and we also have our strengths, and it's so important for you to honor and respect who you are as an individual, be willing to expand your talents and skills, and be aware that life is about living, but being mindful about your living, being willing to learn, being willing to expand, and you're never too old, ever, to learn how to do something better. Never, ever. Are you too old, too young, and it is the stuff of life that makes it interesting. I just think life is fascinating. I really do. I'm amazed by all the different talented people that I meet and the wonderful capability and adaptability we human beings have. But it's always an ongoing education. I've met people that have come from certain cultural environments and they never want to step out of their zone. And I feel so sad with them because they are so afraid that they're going to lose something. And they're not. They can always take the best of whatever their culture has given. But they need to move on so that the expansion and the development of understanding and good communication is going to be there. This is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. When we come back, how has social media made the world a better place? Well, we're going to find out about that and a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and who knows what else I'll bring up in the show. Listen in to find out. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you want to talk. 888-627-6008. We'll be right back.
We see it every day. Courts overflowing with frivolous lawsuits. People losing all of their assets simply because they were unprepared. The best defense against unscrupulous predators and creditors is a good offense. At Corporate Direct, we use the latest legal tools to help our clients of all sizes and from all over the world create a strategy to protect what is theirs. Think asset protection is only for the wealthy? Think again. Our Cover Your Assets strategies and tools are very affordable and practical. Industry leader Corporate Direct is owned and operated by attorney and best-selling author Garrett Sutton. Give us a call at 1-800-600-1760 or go to CorporateDirect.com to see how we can tailor a CYA plan for you. That's CYA, Cover Your Assets, with Corporate Direct. 1-800-600-1760. That's 1-800-600-1760 for CorporateDirect.com.
Good health is something all of us want to have. Being aware of what we eat, its nutritional value, and how to balance our physical needs with our busy schedules is always a challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time goes a long way towards helping us meet this challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time is a nutritional food product that is portable, tasty, and in chewable tablet form, vanilla and honey flavors, a bonus for maintaining a healthy amino acid balance for healthy muscles. Amino Muscle Snack Time can be used anytime, anywhere. First thing in the morning to kickstart your metabolism. Take 20 minutes before or after a workout to help recover and build muscle. Take mid-morning or mid-afternoon to help curb cravings for unhealthy snacks. Weight loss, appetite control, Only top of the line and no genetically modified ingredients are used, no caffeine added. These chewable tablets can be ordered through Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Take charge and jumpstart your food program by adding Amino Muscle Snack Time by visiting Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com for more information. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. 888-627-6008 is the number to call into if you'd like to chat. How has social media made the world a better place? This is something where we may think, oh, there's all these negatives. Obviously, you don't want to Twitter. You don't want to do this kind of stuff when you're driving. Even talking on a cell phone can be very distracting for people because when they're talking, they're focusing on what they're saying and the identity of the individual that they're speaking with. They're not scanning. They haven't trained themselves to really be alert as they should be. Well, there are so many different incidences where it really, really has made a difference. And in October 2012, we all know here in the U.S. what New Yorkers went through because of Hurricane Sandy. And the amazing thing that evolved because of having cell phones and having communication computer capacity to communicate with each other, information regarding transportation, what was available, what wasn't available, gas stations that were open, all of this information was being communicated very, very quickly. Oh, and by the way, next month I'm going to be having a guest on that is going to be giving us information on how you can keep cell phones and other things active. It's just absolutely amazing what's evolving. Also, revolution. We can look at Egypt. Look at how information has gone out into the world via peaceful cell phones, even though they're trying to outlaw it. The same in China. In many parts of the world, people are saying, this is what's happening. See it. This is live. This is real. And Facebook, oh my goodness, it's just amazing. But I learned about some other things with social media. And, of course, it's so expanding. I don't know how anybody can keep up with it. I know it's very difficult for me to even try to do that as one individual. And I think sometimes we need to be able to get together in groups because some people just love being on the computer all the time. And others, like me, have other things that they're doing. They might be using the computer, but they're not doing the social marketing, if you will. Well, there's a 12-year-old by the name of Zach Marks. That's right, 12-year-old. He put together the Grom Social Network. That's GROMSocial.com. This is for kids only, children. Right now, he has well over 14,000 members, and he includes parents in this, and they're the ones that have to approve the friend requests. And what has happened, this has just exploded because it makes it much easier for parents to be able to monitor what is going on. And the word Grom, G-R-O-M, I made it a longer O, I made it Grom, but it's Grom, really, I guess that's the right way to say it. It comes from surfer slang, and it's Australian surfer slang. It means a promising young individual. Young people, they're coming up with these concepts, and they're just putting it out there, and it just takes off. I mean, in the past, how could you possibly have put something together that would have enabled you to communicate with 14,000 people within a very short period of time? Well, this is becoming very commonplace. This is something that people are really wanting, the communication with others. So there's the good side of it that I think we need to remember. And it allows us to integrate and to explore and to communicate on a level that we've never had before. Also, there is, you know, it's just the news here and now. And I think what has been just so amazing with social networking is various stories that you hear. And this is what I came across. There was an individual by the name of Chris Strauss. He had had kidney disease for 3 years. He was told he needed a transplant. What does he do? He goes on Twitter. And he says, I need a kidney. That's all he did. He said, I need a kidney. That Twitter message went out to I don't know how many people. 19 individuals stepped up and offered to be tested. And one of them was a match. And the person decided to go through the surgery, and the donor sent a get well message again on Twitter. These are odds that are just mind-boggling. Saying, this is what I need. This is what I'm doing. Can you help? And getting that many responses. Now, 19 may not sound like much, but he had zero before. I have a friend whose husband died of liver failure, and he wasn't an alcoholic. He got some kind of a virus. He was on a waiting list for a liver transplant for years. And at the time, we didn't have any kind of communication like we do today via the social network. In medicine, it is making an incredible difference. We're going to see surgeries performed, and I know some of them are being done right now, by a doctor in a remote location that may have the skill and the experience advising a doctor in another part of the world on how to do it. He'll actually be able to watch the surgery from wherever he is and guide someone that maybe has never done it before and perhaps saving someone's life. This was done on a very primitive scale years ago. We're getting to the point where we can do it more effectively today. Everything is changing. And yet I have to say, at the same time, a lot doesn't change. And when I say that, the basics of real communication between people, the basics of understanding that how we live our lives, the products that we use, how we are to be good custodians of whatever our environment might be, being mindfully present about what we do, and being thoughtful about how we live. So we live with a sense of, what do you want to call it, attitude about being responsible about what we do and how we do it. I know one of the biggest challenges we have here in the Pacific Northwest is water pollution. And they're becoming more and more vocal about it. Runoff just from the streets. Blacktop, the chemicals that are in blacktop and how it goes into the water supply. We have many, many precious animals that live in our waters here in the Pacific Northwest, and they could easily be killed off because of pollution going into the water. It took a camera woman doing the camera work and showing what was coming out of water runoff pipes and bringing it to the public's view. How do you manage it? Someone came up with a certain idea of being able to garden in a certain way so you process properly. All of this evolved because one woman made a decision she was going to take pictures of what she saw, what she experienced, and put them into public view. The effect is amazing. We have the opportunity to figure out solutions. Being angry, being frustrated, all of that is a very normal response. But it is thinking creatively about what we can do, how we can make a difference that is going to impact the world that we live in. When we become aware and we think things through, looking at both the bigger picture as well as all of the little details that need to be taken care of, it's part of growth and expansion. It's part of what the human experience has gone through for millennia. But now it's becoming more important. And I'll tell you what, we've got a lot of children, young ones, who are so bright and so capable, and we as adults need to support them and encourage them to become the best they possibly can be. Instill in them a love of learning, a love of exploration, a love of life, and how precious it really is. And they are going to be then in charge of their world with an attitude and an understanding that can, well, deal with the problems they are going to be experiencing. This is Donna Sebo. It's been a delight being with you. Thank you. Won't you join me tomorrow? I always enjoy your company. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Math and movement. We're going to be talking about that tomorrow. I think you'll find Susie absolutely a doll to listen to. This is Donna Sebo. Enjoy this day of life that you have. It really is a gift. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.